to be so young and have this fun and be successful. I'm so successful, yeah. And girl, you too, you are so young and beautiful and so successful. Yeah, I'm so successful.
This ain't nothing ordinary for me.
Surprise, surprise.
We ain't going to your favorite place.
Surprise,
yeah. You keep asking why it's so special.
Surprise,
you really wanna know, you'll have to wait.
Surprise, surprise.
Tonight I'm a baller, babe.
Tonight I'm a baller, babe.
If I wipe anything,
even wipe anything.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community In Depth, and I am so fortunate to have on the phone with us right now Karen Eldad, and she is here today to tell us about some of the work that she has done as a certified personal and executive coach. She's an organizational leadership consultant and speaker, and she is the founder of With Enthusiasm Coaching, and she is here to talk today about overachievers. First of all, great to have you on KDWA. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much for having me, Mo. Let's have a brave discussion.
Yes, let's have a good discussion about overachievers. So first of all, tell me a little bit about your coaching job.
So I'm an executive coach, and of course I'm an executive and personal coach. No one is certified just as an executive coach. You have to go through the personal piece first, but I focus on C-suite leaders in major organizations like J.P. Morgan or Van Cleef & Arpels and other big luxury brands and big companies around the world. And I focus on basically teaching them to be courageous, brave leaders, leaders who are vulnerable, leaders who are compassionate, leaders who are service-oriented. But in so doing, because all of these people have one thing in common, and that is that they are rather intense in personality and really focused on achievement, you also have to work with them a lot on overwhelm and anxiety. We had a very, very brief conversation before, but the truth is, Mo, in that discovery, in learning this about my clients, I've really realized that their problems are not unique to them. They're just exacerbated. They're on a much larger scale with them. Most of society today is suffering from the same trappings that all overachievers suffer from. So that's really what I do for a living. And I'd love to dive in further.
Well, let's dive in further first. You're saying that overachievers are a lot of times sabotaging their own success and they're missing the mark on many things. Tell us about that, please.
Well, it's true. I like to call myself a reformed overachiever.
Okay.
Overachiever in recovery. All of us think overachieving is very positive. And the reason we think it's very positive is because it's the gold standard of success. Everyone believes to some extent that hard work is the way to riches and to happiness. But it's simply not the case. All you have to do is look at those who have riches and ask yourself whether they're really truly happy. And I think, Mo, in today's society, with mental health facilities as flooded as they are, with the amount of prescriptions that are written, with the amount of overwhelm and anxiety that we discuss as a society, we can say conclusively that these are really not related concepts. So overachieving is the gold standard. In fact, just last week I read in Wall Street Journal that while the new generations, millennials and younger, don't have all of the same values as Gen X and above them, like, for example, they don't believe for the majority part in marriage, one of the things that they do consistently believe in is the merit of hard work. And unfortunately, you always sabotage your own success this way because you end up with a few side effects. Some of these are like believing that success only comes from power and money, which we just disqualified, at least in part. Some of them are related to the self-imposed benchmarks or the very, very high standards that they set for themselves that are unattainable and make them very hard on themselves and on other people. Other effects are they're terrified of making a mistake. They believe that making a mistake is a career killer or a relationship killer. So they end up either living in the comfort zone, which is a very, very tough way to live, or really, really berating themselves over mistakes, which is something that especially in young generations we're seeing as crippling. And I think one of the biggest things that you see them do that sabotages their success, Mo, is they care enormously about the opinions of others. They live for the validation of others. And this creates invulnerability and lack of trust and lack of trust in yourself and lots of other things that definitely sabotage success.
Do you think overachievers of today are different than they were, let's say, in the 1950s or 60s?
I do. I wasn't around in the 1950s or 60s. I believe that there were overachievers to some degree back then, for sure. And we certainly heard about the effects of stress ever since Hans Selye started testing stress in the 1920s. But today we are living in a completely different world. Think about the overachiever today. Before, you used to look outside at society and say, this person is more successful for me. Maybe you saw the Joneses across the street. Today, you are taking your cues from people you've never met on Instagram or on LinkedIn or on any other social media. The effects are very, very dismal on your own life. And if you've categorized overachieving as your only way to getting success, you overwork yourself, you overstress, and you overemphasize the need for validation from those other people who you've never met. And I think that creates a completely different situation. And we're not talking right yet about younger people, but an enormous amount of research exists to show that younger people today, Gen Z, is particularly exacerbated and has never been more challenged in terms of their mental health because of the effects of the way we see society today.
Is being an overachiever different than being a perfectionist?
They're related. Perfectionism is a subset of overachieving. You see it as a side effect. But overachievers are not necessarily perfectionists, and certainly not in all areas of their lives. Perfectionism is a form of narcissism. It's a need for control, and it's the belief that if you perfect certain parts of yourself, you will be more accepted and less likely to suffer from rejection. Generally, a very, very hard way of living, because it's like having an inner bully yelling at you constantly. As Elizabeth Gilbert, the author, has said so aptly, perfectionism is an haute couture way of saying fear or admitting that you're insecure. So it's definitely a derivative. You see it as an effect of overachieving, but they're not necessarily the same thing. There are many overachievers who, I don't know, eat more than is appropriate or can slack off in certain areas, for sure.
What about being a control freak? Where does that fit into all this?
Very, very similar to perfectionism. Perfectionism, again, is one of the symptoms, but it's not the full picture. In general, it's one of the ways in which they harm themselves, because they're so, so hard on themselves. And that's because they attach their identity to their achievement. And so if you can't control the achievement, and you can't, you know that anyone who's lived more than, I don't know, 5 years on this planet begins to understand that you can't control anything. And that becomes a very aggressively punished need, because no one is going to meet your needs all the time. No one's going to validate you all the time. And you will not be able to keep everything under control all the time.
So when
you're dead.
When you call yourself a recovering overachiever, what does that mean?
Well, it means that I used to live for acclaim and accolades and achievements. I was definitely very, very burnt out by the middle of my 30s. I attained all of the things that I perceived would be the monikers or the hallmarks of success. So for example, Mo, I was married to a tall guy. Everybody knows that that's the gold standard of marriage. I had the C-level job at a billion-dollar corporation, and I lived in a very large house. But I really didn't like any of these. The house happened to be in a city that I actually didn't care for. The job was not something that fulfilled me entirely, and certainly wasn't my passion. And the marriage was a marriage of status, was a marriage that I really think that I chose because I wanted the status of being married too. It was a keeping up with the Joneses decision. And what I say in recovery, it means one day I decided that I don't have to accept this. I don't have to accept stress as a way of life anymore. I don't have to make choices that are quote unquote right, and instead that I want to make choices that are really me and feel good to me, and completely changed my way of living. So if I can do it, so can anybody else.
Is that what you're talking about when you say life fulfillment?
Yes. Life fulfillment is about one thing and one thing only, and it's about getting to live authentically to who you are.
And if you are too busy overachieving, you can't do that?
you don't see it anymore. You miss the mark. How many times are you too busy to even think? I mean, everybody knows this condition. We live in a world where a lot of us are just too busy to go to yoga. And if you're busy to go, too busy to go to yoga, how are you able to do any real thinking about who you are and what you really want?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is we end up just fulfilling the needs of others, living up to the expectations of others, lining up with society. That's normal. That's okay. But it's not fulfilling.
So what is the difference, do you think, between self-esteem and self-acceptance?
So this is the key. I'm so glad you brought this up, Mo. A lot of people think that self-esteem is the end of the game and it's a great thing. That's what we teach our kids, right? You must have self-esteem. You must have confidence. And I say, no, this is where you're tripping yourself up. This is why so many people are shocked when I tell them that I work with C-levels and celebrities. And they're like, but their life is perfect. No, it looks perfect because they have a lot of self-esteem, but they don't have self-acceptance or self-love or self-worth. And here's the critical difference. Self-esteem depends on two things. Number one, your achievements. And number two, what your achievements look like to the world or how you're ranking using these achievements versus your society. So for example, if you're thin, are you thinner than the people around you? If you're very successful, well, how successful are you in comparison with your friends? I've coached people who have a net worth of at least 10 figures, and they say to me, I'm the poorest guy in my group. So it's always about the achievement in comparison to. Now, you can see how this is not reliable, because no matter who you are, conditions will not always be met. And when the conditions are not met, self-esteem walks right out the door. And it's worthless. In fact, in many studies, and I mentioned before to you personally that I'm a suicide counselor with a volunteer organization called Crisis Text Line. And we have found, and lots of research has found, that self-esteem actually makes students much more aggravated and more depressed because they're constantly working to beat their own average and to beat those of others. Instead, if you cultivate self-worth or self-acceptance, you're in a different zone. And that's because what self-worth is, or what self-acceptance is self-forgiveness. It is the ability to understand that you are human, and we are all having a human experience. Human experiences are not perfect. Human experiences are about our own journey. And if you can do that and understand that you're worthy regardless, and that you deserve compassion and can give yourself compassion, you will become unmessable with in any circumstance.
Why is it so hard for us to give ourselves compassion?
I think it's because, first, most of us walk around with a deep fear that we are not worthy, a deep fear of our powerlessness, a deep fear of our helplessness. And I think the truth is it's because all of us have grown up picking up a lot of well-meaning lies from society. Like, you didn't form your identity, Mo, based on what you saw in the mirror as a toddler. You based your identity based on whether you were a good girl in the eyes of your parents or your teachers, or a bad girl. We are all conditioned constantly to associate our goodness and our badness with our external achievements. And that's okay. Our parents were well-meaning. Our teachers were very well-meaning. But it's not the truth. And so what happens is we end up growing up meeting the demands of others constantly and assessing our value according to the validation or approval of others. And that's really not very useful. But that's why this creates the chasm. Brené Brown, of course, is very famous for talking about this all the time. So is Dr. Kristen Neff, but I speak about this especially with overachievers because overachievers place such high standards on themselves that they kind of take this just a little too far.
Certainly people are not born overachievers, so they're nurtured and fostered growing up. That is not a positive thing. Let's talk about the stress that kids have on themselves these days.
I think kids have a very unusual set of circumstances today. The first is, they're not just meeting the validation of their parents or their teachers anymore. They're living on social media. Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Coddling of the American Mind, which I believe is an incredibly important book that everyone should read, talks about the phenomenon of social media and how young kids need to contend with this today. And we know that their suicide rates have skyrocketed. The cutting rates, self-harm rates have skyrocketed. And I mentioned this to you before, but I'll mention it again. More than 75% of our callers on crisis text lines are under the age of 25. They are young. They're very, very young. And living your life on social media and to meet the approval or the standards of some people who are just curating their feeds and living some fictitious influencer life is extraordinarily unhealthy. The second thing is, of course, the appearance of the bulldozer parent or the lawnmower parent. I don't know if you've heard this concept before, Mo, but before, essentially, we had helicopter parents, the parents who hovered around their kids.
Yes.
But from the mid-90s onwards, we start seeing the bulldozer parent, the parent who is trying to do everything for the child. And that's an over-coddling and over-protecting. Of course, an extreme example of this is Felicity Huffman, and the nice lady from Full House, who paid their kids' way into college, essentially. But what you're really doing in that is, number one, setting unusual standards for the kid, and number two, you're doing it for them and not even allowing them to rise to their own power so that they can resolve their own problems. And so we end up with kids who have unusual mental health circumstances, and we're certainly seeing the effects of this everywhere.
And actually, to me, that whole situation that you just spoke about was very sad.
It is sad. It is sad. And it's exactly what it is. Look, first of all, I believe that all parents are well-meaning. I don't believe that there are many parents who want to harm their children. Everybody wants the best for their child. But we have to have a lot of empathy. At the same time, when parents forget that their kids are Olympic champions and that they can believe in them, and that by believing in them, those kids will rise up to meet those expectations, they stop being the supporter of their kid or the role model for their kid, and they start being a protector, and unfortunately an overprotector. And we all make fun of the overprotective Jewish mama who doesn't want to let you leave the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows in the back of their head that that's not a particularly healthy form of parenting. I hope that with more and more cases like this coming to light, more and more parents will realize that they are truly doing their kid a disservice by stepping in the way. The only service that a parent can really do is try to get rid of the social media and be a positive role model who themselves is not massively addicted to social media and really has conversations with the child to understand them and to foster their well-being and to nurture them.
Karen, really, really great information and things to think about. We're so grateful you called in today. Our guest is Karen Eldad. She is a certified personal coach, a certified executive coach, and she has a master's degree in media and communications. She has done many, many things, but hopefully she also has helped us learn a little bit more about the downside of overachieving. Karen, how can people learn more about you, please?
Thank you. I'm on www.kerenelldad.com, KarenElDad.com, and I just want everybody out there to know that there's a way out of all of this, and it just happens to start with recognizing that you might have an issue. That's all.
Karen, thanks for calling in today. Wonderful
Thank
topic.
Thank you so much.
And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.